How did it make you feel to watch that interview and hear what was being said?
Sad.
Sad? Okay, so it was about his time as FBI director and his relationship with Donald Trump. So, yeah, sad, a little bit, yes, Barry? Yeah? A little bit worried, a little bit kind of, thank you, stick to your stomach. Now, admittedly, he's telling his side of the story, but it was fly on the wall stuff. His story of finding out that he'd been fired, seeing it as breaking news on the television. Comey resigned. Correction, Comey fired. You listen to his story of the behaviour of the current President of the United States and thought, I think I'll agree with you. In my opinion, the man who is the ruler of the free world at the moment is not morally fit to hold that role. Now, we make judgments like that because we have ideas about the behaviours we expect of those in power, of the rulers and leaders of the world in government structures that proclaim to have a basis in the rule of law, the rights of people, and to varying degrees of the common good. So that was Monday night. Where did I next take my research for the idea of rule? Miranda Richardson as Queenie in Blackadder 2 and Elizabeth Moss as Offred in The Handmaid's Tale. Miranda's Queen Elizabeth might be vain and venal, but she steals every scene that she's in. Queenie is always right, perpetually spoiled, capricious, and makes ludicrous pronouncements. She believes in the divine right of kings. Now, for the real Elizabeth I, that dogma was essential for her to maintain her authority to rule England in what was a patriarchal society. On the other hand, The Handmaid's Tale is written to show the extremes of supremacy philosophy and how few steps exist between equality and subjugation. Now, let's go back up a level and see the context for today's topic. We're using a learning tool designed to help us understand how the Bible hangs together. And the premise, actually I'll go back to your slide, the premise of the seven streams framework is that the Bible is one story, a big picture. It's about God and what he's doing in the world. So themes told through different but connected stories across the time periods of the Bible unfold the story of God. And the themes reflect gifts that were present before the fall, such as life, rest, blessing, friendship, but were disrupted by the fall. And the tapestry of biblical stories shows us how, by God's grace, these gifts are gradually restored through the history of salvation. We should be able to ask ourselves questions like, in the time of the prophets, what does God have to say about life? Or, during the end times, what do we learn about rest? So today we're looking at the third stream of all gifts, which is called rule. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I struggle with this one. And it's not just because in every sight test I've ever done, I'm low on rule following and I'm motivated by independence and autonomy. but also because I have a different understanding of the primary focus of the starting text that's used in this framework from Genesis. And I don't buy into the idea that all authority is good. But critical thinking is a fine thing. It's not that I don't think that God is ruler over all. I've spoken here before about the importance of the Ephesians imagery of Jesus standing in and over the cosmos, completely filling it. You know, the picture the Bible gives us in Ephesians 2:20-22 of all things being put under the feet of Jesus and that he literally fills all in all is one of the great statements of hope in the New Testament. But I had to wrestle with the idea that God calls us to join him in ruling and the extent to which words such as dominion, subdue, master, and rule should be taken. Was it just my desire for independence clashing up with an anthropologist's abhorrence for chaos? Or are we actually coming from different perspectives in interpreting the overarching biblical narrative? So let's have a look at the starting verse. The first mention of any kind of differentiation of power in the creation comes in Genesis 1:26. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, and let them have dominion over the fish, the birds, the cattle, and the wild animals." Before that, there is no mention of anything in creation having dominion, some kind of exercise of power or authority over other living creatures. So even though other living creatures have already been made, they don't have authority over other creatures. And then Genesis goes on to say, "So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God he created them, male and female he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth.'" Now, I've always taken the focus of that verse to be twofold. Firstly, both male and female are created in God's image. Female is not an aberration and not inferior. As John Goldingay puts it in his book, Genesis for Every Day, the image of God is represented in humanity only when you have both men and women there. There is a structure of authority. God is the ultimate authority. God then delegates authority over creation to humanity. And women and men together are the means of exercising it. Now, I'll come back to that. Secondly, the focus in Genesis is on the fulfillment of blessing and fruitfulness. The subdue and rule element is a part of humans fulfilling our role as God's image bearers on earth and experiencing the blessing of fruitfulness. Ruling is not an end in itself. What I did have to sit and think about as I was preparing is I had to think more about the pre- and post-fall scenarios. The importance of the placement of these verses in Genesis. They're pre-fall. So at this point in the story, there is no suggestion that God designed the world to be a place where humans exercise authority over other humans. There's no mention of authority of men over women, husbands over wives, masters or servants, no kings and subjects. creation reflects Galatians 3:28. Neither slave nor free, nor male or female, nor Jew or Gentile, all were one in creation. Now, despite my wrestling with it, as I reviewed the text, I did have to admit there is a basis to the idea that some kind of rule or exercise of authority is a thread both pre and post fall. And that God does invite us into his rule. But I'm still cautious on how far we should take the idea. Because the concept of man ruling and subduing has been a justification for oppression, violence, and violation for millennia. But if the idea is there in Genesis of us entering into rule with God, being invited by God to do that, what about the other eras of biblical history? We heard the Zechariah and Matthew readings today. The latter, the Matthew reading, echoes the former. So the idea that God's kingship and authority is different than how those with absolute power exercise it, not war and the increase of personal power, but a humble and lowly entry among the people, is what comes through in that stream. And that's the thread that carries through from prophets to the life of Jesus. But the passage that helped me the most was the Philippians 2 reading, Philippians 2:5-10, which describes Jesus' incarnation, death and resurrection as a type of creation, fall and restoration story. In verse 6, we learn that Jesus is equal to God. Jesus has equality with God. But from that, he doesn't see his divinity as something to be exploited. He empties himself of his right to rule. And he becomes like a slave, someone in human form, born in human likeness. And so the original, the creator, becomes like his image bearer. And then being found in human form, instead of complete power, taking complete power in verse 8, he humbles himself. And he undertakes absolute obedience. He suffers a humiliating death on a cross. He has no authority in his death, and he is subject to the brutal authority of those who were commanded to care for and steward the creation. But in his resurrection, he is restored to relationship with God. In verse 9, he's exalted on high. He is the name above all names, and that has a resonance with that Genesis passage of where we're part of the rule that is given to the people, or to humans, is to name him. Jesus is the name above all names. And every knee, every tongue, everywhere shall bow and confess. When we read Bible stories about how rule, power, dominion are exercised by people, by God's image bearers, usually the stories are about people botching it up completely or deliberately misusing the power that they've obtained. But if we compare that to Jesus' exercise of power through humility, the contrast is stark. And the challenge to us is power. Jesus knew his rights, he knew his gifts, and he used them for others. The imagery in Ephesians is of Jesus filling the cosmos. He is equal with God. He could ignore humans, he could destroy humans, But instead, he became human so that we can have a relationship with God. He loves us and calls us to fulfill the role of his image bearers so we can experience the blessing of fruitfulness. And he shows us the essence of God's invitation to join in ruling. That true humility does not seek the best for ourselves, but seeks the best for others. Now, I still have a niggling feeling that somewhere along the line, I might prefer a different word than rule. I might prefer love, or humility, or the exercise of power, which is too long to put on a nice, it's not a taxi for it. But I do understand that time and again, the Bible tells us stories of God trying to show us the true nature of joining him in his rule, and people getting it horribly wrong, and sometimes a little bit right. Now, while we might complain and shake our heads at the failures of world leaders, Jesus calls all the image bearers of God, to participate in this gift of rule. As image bearers of God, we are all called to exercise the authority, dominion, power, call it what you will, that God has given to us. The challenge is ours. It's not just theirs. So that's all been, it's fun. We're going to spend some time chatting with each other now. And there's three questions up there. I don't expect you to get through all of them. I want you to break into small groups. Just in your pews, 3-4 people, and answer these three questions. What does participating in God's rule mean for you? How do you model Jesus' radical rule in your life? And then there's three readings from across the Bible, Psalm 8. Ezra 1 and Romans 5, that you can ask yourself, read and ask yourself, what do you learn about God's rule? And we'll take 5 or 6 minutes to do this.